Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, adventure from a cocktail lounge and a factory. Later on, it's the program High Adventure, but right now, suspense with the story Death of an Old Flame. The CBS broadcast first heard on October 29th, 1961.
A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I looked over his shoulder to see the big open mouth of a nice blue 45. And suddenly I knew what a man feels like when he's just finished digging his own grave.
Listen now to Act One of Death of an Old Flame, starring Larry Haynes and Terry Keane, and written especially for Suspense by George Bamber.
The name's Warren, Ronnie Warren. I play piano. I play in what they call piano bars. That's where they tear the top off a baby grand and build a counter all the way around for the jerks to put their drinks on. I must have played back and forth across the country a dozen times. Never the top spots, but all the joints I worked kept the pianos too.
Hey, Ronnie, the lady wants to hear a song.
That's me. I'll be owned this place. Not a bad guy, as owners go, but still an owner. I look up at the chick at the far end of the piano. She smiles, I smile, slow and shy. You know, I gave her the old Cocker Spaniel, like a boy fresh out of college. And she eats it up.
She even wrote it out for you.
Yeah, so I see. $150 a week, big spender, it just doubles in the bank. I figured if she was going to make a move, she'd wait till his back was turned.
She says she'd like to hear Stardust.
How? Well, tell her that looks more like a telephone number to me.
I think she wants you to call her.
Well, tell her I never learned how to use a phone.
Ronnie, she's a customer.
Yeah, I know. So I smile at her again like we're both college sophomores and this is our first date. But she's a chick like any other, poured into an expensive dress for a night on a town. A local princess who thinks she deserves better than she got. Better than a second-hand car in a garage and television every night. Better than the guy that brought her. Better than anything she'll ever have from the first moment she has it until the last moment she throws it away. For the moment, a piano player in the downtown club is better. And that piano player is me. Tell her I get off work at 2.
Yes, she can't make it. She's with a guy.
Yeah, I see that, but it hasn't stopped her this far, has it?
Ronnie?
Leo, I've been playing saloons for 10 years, and if I've learned anything, I've learned never to trust a chick and never give him a needle break. She'll be here, and I'll take her home. If something better doesn't turn up.
Tell me, Ronnie, how do you do it?
My boyish charm. My boyish charm. That's a joke around the saloon. I'm 35 years old, and I still look like I should be in college. Some guys say that's why I score so much, but really, it's the way I play piano. I play like I'm in another world. And when I look up, I always smile, like I'm pleasantly surprised that such excellent music could find itself in the presence of such superior company. I smile this way whether I'm looking at the wall, the bartender, a crying drunk, or the chick I'm working on at the moment. But out of all of them, only the chicks are flaky enough to take it personally.
Way I get along without you.
I don't play that number.
You used to.
I hadn't seen her come in. And I swung around to see what the voice told me I would find. The eyes were still incredible. So deep and brilliantly blue that you had to look twice to believe what you saw.
Hello, Ronnie.
She smiled. And somebody took a clean blade and dumped my insides on the floor. There was nothing left but an empty, aching hurt. I turned back to the piano because I was afraid I couldn't control my mouth. Hello, Anna.
Mind if I sit down?
No, go right ahead. Haven't seen you around the pool in a long time.
5.5 years, to be exact.
I didn't keep track.
Will you buy me a drink?
I don't buy drinks for customers. She sat like she was suddenly very tired. She toyed with a glove for a moment the way she used to. Her mouth was as I remembered it. And her hair, still soft and natural gold. But then I noticed there was a hole in one of the fingers of the white cotton gloves, and her dress was last year's style. I signaled the bartender to buy her a drink.
Thanks. I read in the paper you were playing here. I kept track of you, where you'd been, when you'd hit town.
Yeah, well, I would have kept in touch, but when I got back that night, all I could find was an empty hotel room. You didn't leave much of a forwarding address.
Ronnie, I know it was wrong. I've been sorry a million times. The paper never said. Did you marry again?
When a man said until death do you part, I figured he wouldn't have bothered to say it if he hadn't meant it. Besides, it came in handy. When a chick would scream, marry me, I'd just say, oh, baby, I'd love to, but I'm already married. Saved me a lot of scenes. How about you?
No.
Frankie leave you for somebody else?
No, he won't marry me.
You still with him?
Yes. Ronnie?
Now, you heard me before. I don't play that song.
Please, I haven't heard it in so long.
Well, I forgot how it goes.
I don't believe that. Please, just once more for old time's sake. Please.
It's over. Everybody gets a coffee break, including piano players. Come on, Anna. What's the pitch? You don't just run out and then pop up 6 years later for nothing. What do you want?
Ronnie, I need help.
What kind of help?
Frank's flat. We don't have a cent.
What do you want me to do? Loan him money?
No.
Well, then what?
He knows where he can make a score. He figures if he can make one good score, we can leave town and start all over again. Maybe go to another country.
What score?
Frank knows where there's $500,000 worth of furs just waiting to be picked up. It's an inside job. He'd handle it himself, except he'd be the first one they suspect. All you gotta do is help me load the truck and drive.
Now, let me get this straight. You want me to help you make a heist, risk a prison rap so you can have enough money to take your boyfriend, Frankie, someplace else where he can live happily ever after?
Ronnie, you'd get half the take.
Anna, the last thing I want is your money.
Ronnie, please. Look, I know I shouldn't ask you, but there's no place else I can turn, nobody else I can trust.
I wanted to take her in my arms and tell her everything would be all right. Because in the heart of every cynic lie the fragments of one great dream. And in the heart of every lady killer smolders the embers of one great love. So when she said...
Please, Ronnie. Just this once.
I said... Okay, Anna. Just this once. For old time's sake. I got to work the next night. I talked to Leo. Boss man, look, I have some business from 10 till 12 tonight. I'd like out.
Hmm? It's important?
Yeah, it's so important that if anybody should ask, I'd be much obliged if you'd say I spent the time sleeping off a hangover on your office couch.
Okay. But let me give you a little piece of advice.
Like?
Like, I don't want to know. But if this important business has anything to do with that broad I saw you talking to last night... I'd watch my step.
Why?
That's Frankie Amato's girl. She's one of the worst rats in this town.
I know.
Okay, so you know. But watch yourself.
When 10 o'clock came, I left the piano and slipped out the back way to a truck marked Royal Furs. Anna was sitting inside waiting.
Hi, Ronnie.
She drove us across town into the back of a small shop. No one was in the alley, so she got out and opened the overhead garage door with a key while I backed the truck inside. She closed the door behind us and locked it.
The further inside this cold storage vault.
She slid back the heavy door and started stripping the hangers. It didn't take long because there weren't too many pieces. I don't know anything about furs, but I do know that what we took wasn't worth any $500,000. Finally, the truck was loaded and we were ready to go. But then she started pouring cleaning fluid out of cans.
Help me spread this stuff around, huh?
What for?
So we can set fire to the place.
Why?
So we can destroy it. Frank says we have to set fire to the place to burn all the evidence.
Look, you didn't mention anything about a fire before.
Honey, I didn't because I was afraid you wouldn't go through with it if I did.
Well, of course I wouldn't. Taking a few furs is one thing, but arson is something else. Somebody could get killed.
We have to. Right now, Frank is playing cards with the guy that owns this place. We have to fix his alibi with the time of the fire.
Oh, I see. All that matters is Frank and his alibi, huh? All that matters is that Frank is safe.
That he's got somebody to steal for him, to lie for him, and for what? What does he do for you, Anna? Answer me. What does he do for you?
Me,
come on, answer me. What does he do for you?
Nothing.
Now, what do you stay with him for? You happy being turned into a two-bit thief to do his dirty work for him, and for what? To lick his boots in gratitude? Are you happy, Anna?
No.
Then why, Anna? Why?
Ronnie, I don't know. If I know, I probably wouldn't do it. I've wanted to leave him 100 times. I don't know.
Just answer me one thing, baby. Do you love him?
I don't know.
Anna, answer me. Do you love him?
No.
I love you.
Honey, please.
I never stopped, Anna. Every town I hit, every place I went, I walked the places we used to walk and listened to the songs we used to sing.
Please don't.
You don't need this, Anna. Put it down. We could cut out of here, leave this town, and never come back.
No.
We could start all over again, right from the very beginning, Anna. Make it like it was before, only better, 100 times
Mother,
better.
Please, no. Look, we can't talk about it now. There isn't any time. Help me finish this, and then we can go to some place and talk about it.
No.
Ronnie, please. We've got to get out of here.
No, no.
Help me do this, and I'll never ask you for another thing as long as I live.
No,
please,
Anna.
Ronnie, please.
Okay. I'll do it. But on one condition.
What?
But after we burn this place, you'll come with me and promise never to see Frank again. Well?
Okay, Ronnie.
I took the camp cleaning fluid from her hands and started splashing it all over the back room and the cold storage vault while she got more of it down off the shelf. We splashed more of it on the loading dock and down the hall leading toward the front of the store. Then she stopped at a door marked office.
In here.
Why in the office?
Frank said to make sure the whole store burns.
By the way, it didn't sound right to me. But I splashed the stuff all over the walls, behind the desk, the plush carpet on the floor, the papers over the desk, everything. Until the room was reeking with cleaning fluid flames until you could hardly breathe. And suddenly, little things I'd been noticing in the corner of my skull began to hit me wrong. It just didn't add up. Until now, Anna had been as cool as a cucumber, but now she was shaking so badly she could hardly hold a can in her hand. A long coil of rope lay on the top of a filing cabinet, looking strangely out of place. And then I noticed that all the mail spread across the desk was addressed to a Mr. Frank Amato. Now, wait a minute. This is Frank's office, isn't it?
Ronnie, we gotta hurry.
Come on, now answer my question. This is Frank's office, isn't
no.
it? This is Frankie's office, and he wants it burned for a reason. Now, what
I
is it?
I don't know what you're talking
oh,
about.
Oh, yes, you do, Anna. You know a lot more about this setup than you're letting on. Now, what is it?
Telling you what?
You haven't leveled with me all night, have you?
Stay away from
you
me.
Haven't leveled with me since the night we met.
Don't touch
me. Come on,
me.
Answer me, Anna. What's going on?
You heard the lady. Piano player, keep your hands off.
I looked over her shoulder to see the big open mouth of a nice blue .45. And suddenly I knew what a man feels like when he's just finished digging his own grave.
In a moment, we'll return with Act Two of... Suspense. Now, from DuPont, comes the most advanced antifreeze and summer coolant ever developed for any car, new or old. Its name... Tellar. T-E-L-A-R. Tellar. It takes 1.5 gallons of Tellar to protect the average full-size car down to zero. And at its new low price, your dealer can protect your car with Tellar for only about $1 more than ordinary antifreezes, even less for compact cars. But, and this is important, once installed, DuPont Tellar can be left in all year round, summer and winter, for as long as you keep your car, any car, new or old. Your servicing dealer will tell you exactly why this is possible. In addition, Tellar is specially recommended for modern aluminum engines. So ask your servicing dealer to install Tellar antifreeze and summer coolant in your car. Remember, it's made by DuPont. Tellar. T-E-L-A-R. Tellar.
That's right, college boy. Keep your hands over your head.
No one ever introduced us, but I'd say offhand you're Frank.
And you're bright, college boy, real bright.
Now, look, if this is a shakedown, I'm afraid you got the wrong party. I'm broke.
Oh, this isn't penny ante stuff. I'm going after. This is money, big money.
Well, pardon my density, but I still don't get it.
You've heard of insurance, haven't you, college boy?
Oh, sure, sure. But I don't see how you can collect on a store you don't own. Or do you?
I don't own the store. I don't have that kind of change at present. So I insured myself. Alive, I'm not worth 2 cents, but dead, I'm worth 50 grand. That's quite a piece of change. And Anna here is my only beneficiary.
Oh. Well, I don't know how this figures me. Unless you want me to help you commit suicide.
Oh, suicides don't collect. Besides, I wouldn't die for any broad. That's strictly for suckers like you.
Okay, I've been a sucker up until now, but I don't think I can make this gig anymore, man.
Nobody's going to commit suicide. I'm going to be murdered.
Well, like I said, I still don't get it.
Well, I guess you ain't as bright as I thought. I told the owner of the store I was going to work late tonight, go over the books. The police will think I accidentally left the door unlocked. Somebody found it open, came in, tied me to my chair, stole all the furs, and then burned the store to destroy the evidence.
Now, wait a minute.
In the meantime, I'll be on my way to Mexico, where Anna will join me after she's had sufficient time to recover from her grief and collected the insurance money.
Well, there's only one thing wrong with that little plan, Frankie. Nobody would ever confuse me with you, not in a million years.
Oh, I don't know. We're about the same height and build. You ever seen what a man looks like after he's been soaked with cleaning fluid and touched off with a match? I'm betting there's not much more than a crisp char to compare anything with. You always wanted to take my place, college boy? Sit down in my chair behind the desk and turn around and face the wall.
I did as I was told. There wasn't much else I could do. But before I did, I took one last look at Anna. She couldn't face me.
Hold the gun on him, Anna, while I tie him up. If he even looks like he's going to move, let him have it.
Since I was as good as dead anyway, I knew that anything I did would be the right thing. They say that a man who's about to die starts praying. I didn't. I started thinking hard and fast because I wanted so badly to go on living. I don't look like I could punch my way out of a paper bag, but while I was waiting out the army's boredom in Japan, a gentle old Japanese man taught me you don't need brawn to defend yourself, just brains and speed. And a thing called karate. Piano player's best friend, you don't hurt your hand. And I knew I had to have something to defend myself against husbands and boyfriends. So I learned karate and the art of timing and surprise. I waited until I could feel him touch my arm. And when he slid his hand down to my wrist, I made my move.
I grabbed two of his fingers and heard them snap as I bent them back. That, coupled with surprise, made it easy for me to slip him around in a half Nelson. His fingers hanging like loose spaghetti, so his body was between me and the gun. I knew Anna wouldn't hesitate to shoot me, but I figured maybe Frankie Boy would something else.
Shoot! For God's sake, Anna, shoot!
I can't!
Kill him, Anna! Kill him!
I can't! I might hit
him! All right, Anna. Put the gun down and back out into the hall.
No.
Go on, do as I say, Anna. I can kill him with my hands if I want to. You know that.
No, Anna,
you
no.
know I can do it, Anna. You've seen me practice, remember? All I have to do is add a little pressure right here.
You
got it.
Do like he says. Do like he says.
That's better, Anna. I waited until she put the gun on the table and went back clear out to the hall before I spun Frank around and slammed him with stiff fingers hard right under the breastbone. He crumpled like a rag doll with his eyes bulging like a drunk with the heave. I ran from the office, grabbing Anna by the arm as I went.
What did you do to him?
Nothing, nothing. He'll live. Come on.
You killed him.
He only wishes I had. Come on. I dragged her all the way back to the loading dock, and she fought me every step of the way. We jumped down and ran past the truck to a small door where I struggled with the bolts, all the time keeping a tight grip on her wrist. I guess I didn't jab him hard enough because Frank came out of the dock after us, doubled over in pain, his gun in his hand.
Frank!
Come back here, you! Come back!
I shoved her out the door ahead of me and drove out just as he cut loose. The shots were like matches in a gas tank. The cleaning fluid fumes made the whole building explode in a roar of flame.
Frank!
Come on, let's get out of here.
No, we can't leave him. He'll burn alive.
I can't help him, Anna. It's too late.
Let me go to him.
Anna, you can't go in there.
Frank,
I'm going to go. Anna, no. Anna, come back. Anna!
Paper where my old friend Frank Amato finally met with a fatal accident.
burned to death.
Oh, that's so?
It happened last night. I don't guess you'd know anything about it, would you?
No, I don't guess I would.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Well, the cops figured that he was trying to rob the place where he worked, and then burn the store to cover his tracks. And somehow he touched up the place ahead of time and burned him and the girl that was with him.
That was the girl?
Yeah. They're probably the one that was in here last night. But they aren't sure yet. They haven't even been able to identify his body positively yet.
That's too bad.
Yeah. That's the way I thought you'd feel. I don't look now, but I think you've got a customer coming your way. I think I'll check the bar.
Yeah, thanks, Leo. I knew what was coming. Without even looking, I knew.
Do you know Stardust?
I'd have to struggle to keep from choking. Do I know Stardust? But I don't let it show. I look up, slow, shy. Smile, and give her the old cocker spaniel. Stardust. Beautiful song about a beautiful girl. I was hoping you'd ask.
Thank you.
Pleasure's mine.
I've been listening to you. You play very well.
Thank you. It's been a long time since anyone said that. Most people just drink, pretend to listen. But not you. You're different. You're special. So, for a special girl, I'm going to play a special number. Not just something like Stardust.
Larry Haynes and Terry Keane, and written especially for Suspense by George Bamber. Suspense is produced and directed by Bruno Zerato Jr. Special music for today's story of Suspense was composed and performed by Norman Parrott. Featured in tonight's story were Ralph Bell as Frank, Robert Donnelly as Leo, and Evelyn Juster is the girl. Listen again next week when we return with Till Death Do Us Part, written by Ben Kagan. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from October 29th, 1961 on CBS. You're listening to an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now a strange story on the High Adventure series next. After this next broadcast, it would mark a 3-year break for the series. It was on Mutual from 1947 through 49, then on NBC from January through October of 1950, and would return on Mutual for a 1953-54 run. The story called Metamorphoside from October 8, 1950.
This is High Adventure, the telling of strange stories of strong men living the greatest and most exciting moment of a lifetime, their moment of high adventure. And on the agenda at the meeting is a story called Metamorphosite. The author and director, Robert Monroe. And to tell it, here's the man who lived it, Van Morone. Van?
I guess everybody in the world has a problem. Maybe a lot of people have had the same kind I have. I don't know, because I never had the chance to find out. I had a pretty sheltered life when I grew up. My parents always saw that I got everything I wanted. but they died soon after I married Jody and I had to go out and make a living. I was never used to working with people too much, so when I got the job with Rustlin Martins, it was pretty hard. Wasn't much, just handling a rotary surface grinder to polish the sides of knife blades. I don't know how long it was I'd been working there, maybe 5 or 6 years when this problem started. We'd been invited out on a very special dinner engagement, and I was having trouble finding the place.
You'd think he'd at least have told you the right address.
I got it right now, Jody. It was 323 instead of 232.
Are you sure?
The drugstore had a new phone book, so it must be right.
Well, I wouldn't invite anybody to dinner and make them have to stop and look up the address.
Mr. Evans probably thought I knew it.
More than likely, he told you and you forgot it.
Oh, no, I don't think he did.
I wouldn't be surprised. You even forgot he asked us until today. Then you suddenly remembered. Oh, Van, I don't know what I'm going to do with you sometimes.
It was weeks ago that he asked us, Jody.
Suppose you'd forgotten completely about it.
I wouldn't do that.
You might have. Suppose you didn't remember until tomorrow. Your employer, your boss, asked you to dinner. First time he's shown any interest
now,
in you.
Jody.
And... oh, I don't know. And don't call me Jody.
All right, Jody. Josephine.
Look at these beautiful big homes.
They are big.
I wonder what it's like to live in a house that big.
Mr. Evans lives along here somewhere.
323, remember?
Yes, Jody.
There's 319. The next one, Van.
Oh, it's a big place.
It should be, with the money he's got. Don't turn so fast.
A little sharper than it looks.
Isn't that a beautiful lawn?
Nice and green.
Drive up to the front entrance, then.
All right.
Must be the gardener there by the flower bed.
Yes, I guess they can afford... oh, no, that's Mr. Evans.
You're sure?
Sure. I've seen him when he came through the shop.
I still don't understand it. He doesn't even know you to speak to you, and he invites... stop the car, Van.
Well, I thought you said to drive up to
it'll
the front.
It'll be nice and informal to greet Mr. Evans while he's relaxed with his flowers. Probably his hobby, Van. Stop right up there.
All right, Jody.
Please, Van. Josephine.
Sorry.
He's not very courteous. He's not even bothering to come meet us.
Well, maybe he wants us to go to the house.
No. We can be as informal as he can. Come on.
Yes?
Hello, Mr. Evans.
How do you do?
We're a little late because I didn't get the house number right.
Late?
Of course, not much, but I thought I'd better tell you why.
I'm afraid I don't follow you.
Well, it's not important, I guess, because Jody says it's stylish to be a little late, but I thought
I'm Mrs. Marola, Mr. Evans. I don't trust Van to getting around to formal introductions.
Mrs. Marola?
I think you have a very lovely bed of perennials. Don't you think so, Van?
Oh, yes.
It must be your hobby.
I like to put her around.
I understand. I do, too. I think it was so nice of you to invite Van and myself.
Invite you?
I don't believe Van even thought you remembered him.
Now, one moment, please.
But then when he said you'd asked us for dinner, well, frankly, I was as surprised as he was.
There must be some mistake here.
Mistake?
There must be.
Van said you were Mr. Evans.
Yeah, I am.
Now, Jody.
The Mr. Evans who owns Russell and Marden's Hardware?
Yes.
Then there's no mistake.
I'm sorry, but there is. I don't believe we've met before.
Of course you haven't met me, but you know my husband, Van.
Do I?
Why, yes, Mr. Evans. I work in the grinding room at the plant.
Oh, I see. Oh, yes, your face is somewhat familiar.
This is the night you asked us for dinner.
I asked you to dinner?
That's right. You remember?
I'm sorry, but I don't.
What?
Van.
I don't recall inviting you to dinner. As a matter of fact, I don't even know your name.
Well, of course you do. I'm Van Marola. I work on the Blanchard, grinding 264 blades.
I'm always glad to meet my employees personally, Marola, but this is hardly the place and time.
You didn't invite us to dinner tonight?
I'm sorry, no.
Of course you did, Mr. Evans.
When?
Why, a couple of weeks ago. I was demagnetizing the chuck, and just as I was about to put a new piece on the plate...
If you'll excuse
me. You came over and put your arm around my shoulder, and you said, Van...
You must have been drunk. And I want to tell you
no,
I don't...
No. You said, Van, I want you and the wife to come up to my place for dinner.
I'm sure I didn't say any such thing.
Well, then I asked you when, and you said 3 weeks from that Friday. I almost forgot about it until today, but well, here we are.
That's the strangest fabrication I ever heard. What are you after, Marola?
I'm not after anything. We just came to dinner like you asked us to.
I didn't ask you to dinner.
You didn't?
No, I didn't. You must have been dreaming.
Dreaming?
Now, will you kindly leave my premises, or shall I call someone to show you off?
Dreaming.
Come on, Van. embarrassed in my entire life. Van, how could you do it?
I don't know.
To make up such a wild lie as that. I don't blame Mr. Evans, whatever he thinks of this. Didn't you know that you'd be found out? Did you think you could walk right into somebody's house and put across a story like that? Oh, Van.
I don't know.
Why didn't you tell me it was a joke or something? If I'd known it was a lie or a joke, but to make up something like this and then try to brazen it out. Did you think I wanted to have dinner with the great Mr. Evans that much? Why did you do it, Van? Why?
I don't know. I don't know. Dreaming. I couldn't tell my own wife, Jody. I couldn't tell Mr. Evans how right he'd been. The moment he'd said it, I knew it had been a dream. I dreamed that he's asked us to dinner, and as the weeks passed, I turned the dream into reality. I hadn't lied. I was sure it had actually happened. I was sure of it. But it had only been a dream. We drove home, ate without saying a word, and I lay down on the couch in the front room. Jody was somewhere in the kitchen washing the dishes. She was unhappy, and I was the cause of it. I wouldn't let it happen again. I wouldn't let it happen again.
Van, are you asleep?
What? Oh, no, dear, I'm awake.
I'll have dinner ready in a few minutes.
Jody.
Yes?
Come here.
What do you want, honey?
I quit my job today.
Good.
Old man Evans wanted me to stay, but I quit.
Serves him right, trying to bribe you with that big dinner the other night.
Well, I'm through with him. Jerry's coming over in a few minutes, and we're going to talk business.
Did he quit, too?
Mm-hmm. We're going to start a plant of our own.
Van.
Like it?
It's wonderful.
I figured it was about time I got out and did something big.
You'll do big things, Van. I know you will.
Hey, what do you say we take Jerry and go out and celebrate, huh?
I'd love it, honey.
We're going places and do up the town, honey. Put the stuff on the stove back in the icebox. I'll buy us a dinner at the best restaurant. Oh, that's Jerry now.
I'll get it.
Uh-huh.
Hiya, Brain.
It's Jerry, all right.
Come on in.
Well, no more rides to work.
Nope.
Trouble was, we never knew how smart Van here was, Judy.
He's swell-headed enough.
Well, I have a right to be.
I don't deny that, big shot. Now, come on, let's talk business. You build 'em and I'll sell 'em.
I'll get dressed.
You going out?
We're all going out and celebrate.
Hey, that's all right.
I want to talk over a few things first.
Sure, Chief, sure.
Well, first of all, I think I got all the papers straight on the patent tonight. That ought to be our first product.
You know best, Van.
I'll design the dies for it as soon as I can, Jerry. Now, what about the factory building?
Well, I went over on my lunch hour like you told me to.
Good.
Van.
And just as you thought, we can get it cheap if we play it careful.
Van.
What's the matter?
I don't know. Nothing, I guess. Go on.
So I told the guy we'd let him know tomorrow.
Van, wake up.
Hey, are you listening to me?
Yeah, sure I am. Go ahead.
Act like somebody's bothering you.
I don't know. I just feel funny.
Hungry?
Van.
Yeah, maybe that's it. I'll get Jody and we'll go out.
Now you're talking my language.
Van, will you please wake up?
Can you beat it? For years we drive past that plant.
You'll be late again.
Now you and me will be running the place ourselves.
Jerry's outside honking, Van.
Too bad you're Van instead of Tom. Then we'd be Tom and Jerry Incorporated. Pretty neat, huh?
Van, will you wake up?
Yeah, we'll all have Tom and Jerry. Not bad. Not bad.
Van.
Hmm? Oh. I thought you were dressed, Jody.
Well, I don't have time to dress when you oversleep. And will you please tell that Jerry to stop honking?
Jerry? Oh, Jerry, yeah.
I'll fix you some coffee for breakfast while you get dressed.
Yeah, all right, Jody. Oh.
I should think you would be after sleeping on the couch all night. Some people don't have sense enough to come to bed.
Yeah. You should have awakened me.
I can't be bothered. You stop that honking.
All right, honey. I'll tell Jerry to wait a minute. Yeah. He stopped, Jody.
He'd better. Why, you can't take a streetcar to work instead of riding with that bum.
Oh, he isn't a bum, honey. He's just a...
Hey, are you coming or not?
I'll be ready in a minute, Jerry.
Well, I don't want to be late again just because of you.
Don't you believe in knocking before you enter a house?
Not when I'm in a hurry.
Some men.
I feel sorry for some of them myself.
What was that?
How about it, Ben? You coming?
Yeah, I'm ready.
I haven't the coffee made, so you'll have to do without it.
Oh, that's all right, honey.
What'd you do, sleep in your clothes all night?
I guess they're just rumpled.
Well, come on.
Van.
Yes, Jody.
I think you better go in and apologize to Mr. Evans.
I can't just walk in and see him.
You tried to walk in and eat with him last night, so you can walk in and apologize this morning. Tell him it was a joke. Tell him anything.
All right, I will.
Are you coming?
Yes, sure, Jerry.
You're going to have to take your car to work next week. Mine's going to be in a shop.
Yeah, sure.
It's your week to drive us anyway.
I will.
What'd you want you to go in and apologize to the old man Evans for?
Oh, crazy thing that happened last night.
What's this about eating with him?
Oh, just a joke.
Some joke?
Yeah.
Old man Evans would no more ask you to dinner than he would me. And he's never going to ask me, I can tell you.
No, I guess not. Hey, Jerry.
Yeah?
You really think we can get the plant?
Huh? What plant?
The government plant over there. Remember we were talking about it?
When were we talking about it?
Well, just last... I don't know. Forget it.
What'd you do? Hang one on last night?
I was thinking about something else.
I guess you were. What would we do with a factory like that?
Nothing, I guess.
White elephant, that plan is. War over, no good for anything.
No, it isn't.
Now look, Van, you gotta be more like me if you're gonna get along.
Yeah, I
know. A million
know.
Times, I told you. You gotta tell people off or they walk all over you. You gotta be bored.
Yeah.
Jody's a swell woman and all that, but you gotta be boss.
She's my wife, Jerry.
You do what I tell you, you'll be happy.
I'm happy. We rode down to the Rustlin Martin plant as we had 1,000 days before. And Jerry said the same things he'd said 1,000 times before. Jerry meant well, but it was strange he didn't remember about the plant. I could see he didn't remember. That's why there wasn't any use in talking to him. When we got to work, I thought about what Jody told me to do, but I didn't go to see Mr. Evans. So the rest of the week, I kept giving her reasons why I hadn't gone to Mr. Evans, and each morning she'd remind me to see him. She was still reminding me the next week when it was my turn to take Jerry and me in my car. It'd been hot all day. I was tired when I drove down Lane Avenue with Jerry half asleep in the seat beside me. But to give Jody another good reason why I hadn't seen Mr. Evans was a long, straight road, long and hot with good reason for Mr. Evans, a good reason.
I thought you'd like this place, Marola. That's why I asked you to have lunch here. Of course. I had another good reason, too.
Yes, I suppose you did, Mr. Evans. You're not the type of man who does anything without a reason.
I'm a man who comes directly to the point.
That's fine. So am I.
When you and your lovely wife had dinner with me the other evening...
Well, that was a fine dinner.
Glad you liked it.
Uh-huh. Well, come to the point.
Well... I wanted to find out your reason for quitting us.
I see.
There was a great future for you with Rustlin Martin.
I don't think so.
Oh, I'd had my eye on you.
I'm sure you have.
I'll stop playing with words. Is it true you and this Jerry have opened the government plant? You going to make knives there?
That's right.
You'll be in competition with Rustlin Martin.
Oh, we realize that.
I'm a tough man to buck, Marola.
We can do it.
Now, look here. We can use men with ideas.
Ah, you had your chance.
Oh, I know you went a long time without any recognition.
Sorry, Evans. We've already made plans. We'll be in production on our new style kitchen knife within a month. Too late for us to stop.
Well, I'm a fair man, Marola. I wish you luck. It'll be a friendly rivalry. And come up again for dinner.
Well, thanks. I don't think we'll take up that.
What have we hit? Are you all right, Van?
It's a good knife. It'll outsell.
Hey, Van! Van! You okay?
Huh? Oh.
Are you hurt?
Oh. No, I'm not hurt.
Car's over on its side. Gotta get out. It might burn.
What happened?
You ask me. Let's get out.
My sleeve is torn.
Yes, you worry about your sleeve. Look at your car.
Oh, front end smashed in.
What happened anyway?
Didn't you see?
I was sleeping.
Well,
must have hit that wall there, then turn over.
Yeah.
How come you did that?
I don't know.
Looks like you skidded on the car track.
Yeah, I guess that was it.
You guess? Don't you know?
Well, you see, Jerry, Mr. Evans and I were talking.
Who?
Mr. Evans.
Is he here?
Well, no, we were sitting.
Well, here comes the cops.
What do they want?
You find out. Now, listen, Van, you got to give them a good story. You tell them just what I say.
Why?
Tell them you blew a tire. Then it's not a criminal case.
Criminal?
Stick to your story, you hear me? The tire blew and threw you into the wall.
Criminal?
Don't worry. You get out of it.
All right, what happened? You the driver?
No, he was.
Well?
The tire blew.
That make you go clean across the street and ram that building?
The tire blew.
We'll see. Frankie, check the tires on the rack and get witnesses.
Okay, sir. Hey.
Now, you sure you want to stick to the tire story?
Sure he does.
Who are you?
I was riding with him.
I see.
We were going along when all of a sudden there was a big boom like a gunshot. That's what I thought it was. Then we started to swerve. Pretty soon we hit the building.
Is that right?
Hey, don't.
Oh, stay here a minute. I'll be back.
It's okay, man. I fixed it.
Jody wanted to use the car tonight.
Well, she's sure not going to use it now.
It cost a lot of money to have it fixed.
You better worry about fixing the side of that building.
Yeah, I'll have to pay for it. The
building didn't jump out and hit you, remember?
No.
Well, you sure you want to stick to that tire story?
Well, yeah.
Okay, you better come with me.
What for?
Get booked.
Jail. What'd he do?
Jail.
The tires on your jalopy show no blowout. And Frankie says you must have been doing 50 to knock a hole in the building like you did. This is a 30-mile zone.
Now, wait a minute.
Now, if you're his friend, you better see what you can do about getting bond for him.
Put me in jail.
You don't smell it, but witnesses say it looked like a clear case of drunken driving. And we're having none of that in this town.
Drunk.
He's not drunk.
Maybe not. We'll find out soon enough down at the station. Come on, you.
No.
Now, don't worry, Van. I'll get Jody. We'll get you out quick. Now, don't worry, none.
I can't go.
Sure you can. Just like this. Come on.
Criminal. Jail. It was late night before they came, Jerry and Jody. They had the guard unlock the door and let me out. Good old Jerry. She was mad. Dear sweet Jody. They said it'd come up in court the next week, so each day when I went to work, I'd look at the calendar next to my machine and count the days before the trial. Car was being fixed, so Jerry and I went to work on the streetcar until his car was out of the shop. I'd sit there at my rotary grinder and watch the calendar. I didn't have to mark the days off. I knew when they were. It was tomorrow I'd have to go watch the grinder in the soapy water. Watch it. And tomorrow I'd have to go watch it. Watch it. Well, it's my own plant, and I can do what I want in it.
Mr. Marola here. First bet his shirt, then his suit, and he lost.
I wish I could have seen you in front of all those men in just a pair of shorts, darling.
Well, we had a lot of fun.
The boys love you for it.
They're fine fellas.
It's sure a busy place, isn't it?
Honey, the way Jerry's selling, we have to keep busy.
And just a short time ago, nobody wanted the place.
We'll have old man Out Evans out of business before long. You wait and see.
Oh, I don't want to do the old boy any harm.
Van, you're too nice.
Oh, Van can be tough when he has to be, Mrs. Marola.
Well, I'm married to a caveman.
You ought to know.
Am I a caveman?
Show me.
Hey, not in the shop. You want to disrupt plant morale?
She's my wife, isn't she?
I'd better be.
Come here.
Van.
Hello, honey.
I'm proud of you, dear. You're my husband, my sweetheart, my...
Crazy dope, cut it off.
Gotta be proud of me.
Cut it off. What's the matter, Marola? You fall asleep?
Oh, don't mind us, Fred.
You dumb TV, look what you've done. Huh? You ground it clean out. Nothing left.
I did?
And it's the last time. You've been falling off for months now, but this is the end of the line.
End of the line?
That's what I said. I tried to be patient with you, Marola. I've covered up your mistakes as best I could. Now you gotta go to the big boss.
Mr. Evans? Well, what for?
He's got a rule. Don't fire anybody. Let him do the firing.
Firing?
I'm sorry, but that's how it's gotta be. Can't let my shop efficiency fall down because of one man.
You're firing me.
I'm not firing you. The big boss does that. He wants to be sure every case is justified.
I won't have a job.
This ain't your kind of work, Marola. I've been seeing it all along. Now, come on.
I don't want to see Mr. Evans.
You've got to. Come on. There he is over there, I think. Come on.
Criminal.
It's a bad thing to let one of them Blanchards bear down full, wrecks everything.
Jail.
Oh, like getting out of jail, huh? Well, I don't blame you. It's hard work. What the GBs, the pay is good.
Good? Get into full production.
Now, Mr. Evans.
Yes?
This is Marola, sir. I'm letting him go. He's been dropping off in efficiency, late to work, low output, and today he burned up the Blanchard.
I see. Too bad. Well, what's your side of the story, Marola? Well, don't be afraid. Speak up.
Hey, he looks funny.
Mr. Evans? I won't talk any merger until I've heard from Jerry.
Now, Van. I know you're the brains of your outfit. That's why I came here to your office.
I'm sorry, Evans. Jerry started out with me on this thing, and I'm a fair person. I believe he should have a voice in the matter.
What kind of talk is that?
I don't know. Say, aren't you the Marola who brought his wife out to my home? Thought I'd invited you to dinner? Yes, you are.
Well, of course, I know how Jerry feels. I think he'd agree to merger with your company on one condition.
Well, it would have to be a hard one to meet before I'd refuse.
All right, Evans. Here it is. You'll retire from the business immediately and we'll take over both plants. We'll give you 23% of our stock issue for your factory and good name.
That's a hard bargain.
I'm afraid that's the only one we'll accept.
All right. It's a deal.
Well, Marola, go on and speak up. Mr. Evans here is giving you a chance.
Wait a minute.
What is it?
This man's sick.
He ought to be after what he did to that Blanchard.
I'm glad you accepted, Mr. Evans. I don't like to be harsh to any man, but you're our strongest competitor, and after all, business is business.
I understand, my boy. Say, this is certainly a beautiful office.
Yeah, we've been doing all right.
This man needs a doctor. You'd better call his wife.
Yeah, I will. I'll get his pal, Jerry, to help.
Now, if you'll excuse me, Mr. Evans, my wife is waiting outside in the car. We're going to take a little vacation out west. Matter of fact, you can take a vacation yourself now. How about it, huh?
Yes, indeed. Well, good luck. I'll see you when we get back. That'll be a long time.
I got my car. I'll take him.
Hello, honey. Sorry to keep you waiting.
You and your business.
Well, we're through with it for a while anyway.
I've been waiting so long for this, Van.
And now we're starting.
Yes, it's wonderful.
Oh, I feel great. Like a new man, Jody. Jerry's staying to take care of the plant. Why, everything will be fine. We'll just drive and drive until we hit the sunset. Oh, it's damn life.
I've examined him very carefully, Mrs. Morello.
What can I do, Doctor? What can I do for him?
There's not much we can do at the moment.
But what is it?
Please be calm, Mrs. Morello. Maybe a month, a year, perhaps longer. It's hard to tell about schizophrenia. Some return slowly, others overnight.
Van, dear, please. For me. Van. It's Jody. Jody. Van.
Mm-hmm. What? Oh, no. Don't worry, honey.
What did you say? Why'd you stop humming, dear? I like it.
Oh, I don't know. I thought I remembered something. Oh, well, it slipped my mind.
How do you like the new car?
I like you better.
Now, wait. I have to drive.
All right, honey.
It's a wonderful day.
Oh. Yeah. Wonderful.
Title, Metamorphosite, a story of the one thrilling moment in a man's life that can only be called high adventure. And heard in Metamorphosite as Van was Ross Martin with Abby Lewis, Mort Lawrence, and Phil Sterling.
High Adventure, on Tuned to Yesterday from October 8, 1950 on NBC. And that wraps up this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVernier. Thanks for tuning in.